Good morning and welcome to today's public affairs programming here on KNCI, KZZO, KYMX, and KHDK. Operated by Bonneville International, I'm Cody Robinson. My first guests are Dr. Claudia DeYoung, a board-certified internist who specializes in breast cancer and runs a breast cancer clinic at South Sacramento Kaiser Permanente. Also joining her are Rhonda Azaguirre, Jennifer Dresser, and Mari Guzman, all breast cancer survivors and co-authors of Hope Among Us, Stories of Three Young Breast Cancer Survivors. They're here to share their breast cancer journey for awareness and tell us why they wrote the book, how healing it was, and hoping to help others. Thanks for being with us. Could you introduce yourselves and provide a little background on what you do?
My name's Jennifer Dresser, and I'm a stay-at-home mother of four kids. They were ages 2, 7, 10, and 13 at the time of my first diagnosis. I am one of the co-authors of Hope Among Us, Stories of Three Young Breast Cancer Survivors. I was diagnosed with breast cancer at age 37 in 2012. Wow. And then again in January of 2019, I completed active treatments in June of 2020, not that long ago.
My name is Rhonda Azaguirre. I'm a school psychologist, wife, and mother of two children. My children were 6 and 9 at the time of my diagnosis. I'm also one of the authors of Hope Among Us. I was diagnosed with breast cancer at age 38 in March of 2017. I completed active treatments almost 3 years ago in May of 2018.
My name is Mari Guzman. I am an attorney. I'm married and I have two boys, ages 6 and 11. At the time of my diagnosis, I'm the most recently diagnosed. I was diagnosed in September of 29 at the age of 42. And I recently completed my active treatment in November 2020. And I am the last co-author of Hope Among Us.
And I am Dr. Claudia DeYoung. I am a board-certified internist who specializes in women's health and specifically breast health. I run our breast clinic as well as our breast cancer survivorship program at the Kaiser Permanente Medical Center in South Sacramento.
So Dr. DeYoung was involved in all three of our diagnoses, and she's been following us throughout our survivorship. She's given us a lot of support and advice. She's been available more than any other doctor, and I would say that she also wrote the foreword of the book. So Dr. DeYoung figuratively ties us together in the book.
Great. How do you four women know each other? How did you meet?
So Mari and I met 10 years ago when our son started preschool in the same class. Jennifer and I met 6 years ago when our daughters started kindergarten together. We became friends through our children and have shared a lot of experiences, including our diagnosis of breast cancer.
Let's get into the basics here. We're obviously talking about breast cancer. So what is it for those who don't know, and what are the different types and stages of it?
So I will take that question. Obviously, this is Dr. DeYoung. And, you know, cancer happens whenever cells within a particular organ start to grow out of control. And typically that path from having cells get a little bit damaged to full-fledged, you know, rapid growth, cellular growth that turns into a tumor or a lump, usually takes years, believe it or not.
People
don't always recognize that. But that's what happens in the breast when cells start to grow at uncontrollable rates because they get damaged from various possible sources of how cells get damaged. You know, there's so many types of breast cancer you hear about. But basically, breast cancer either comes from the duct, where the milk kind of comes along to the nipple, or the lobules, where the milk is formed. So breast cancer either comes from the ducts or the lobules. Ductal carcinoma is the most common type of breast cancer that we see. Stages range from stage 0 or in situ cancer, where the cancer is contained within the duct and hasn't broken beyond the duct wall. That's stage 0. It's the earliest stage breast cancer. And then there's stages 1, 2, 3, and 4. And stage 4 breast cancer means that cancer has spread to distant organs outside the breast, whether that's the bone or the liver or the lung, for example. Now, the stage of a woman's breast cancer is actually determined not only by the size of the actual cancer itself, but if any lymph nodes are involved and if any distant organs are involved. And more recently, the staging has been updated to where whether your breast cancer is sensitive to the hormone estrogen and progesterone and a protein called HER2 also play a role in the staging process. So the staging process involves many different facets.
Now, how common is breast cancer?
So average risk is about 11 to 12% lifetime risk, rather. You hear that 1 in 8 statistic, 1 in 8 women will get breast cancer. That is for average risk women throughout their entire life. And again, that equates to about a 12 to 13% lifetime risk. Certainly there's some women with hereditary genetic mutations or family history where their lifetime risk is more. And there's some women who statistically, based on lifestyle choices and other factors, it's slightly less than the 11 to 12%.
Now, is it just found in women?
Great question. Because men do get breast cancer. And I know it's a shock to a lot of people to hear that. It's quite rare. Male breast cancer cases account for about just 1% of all breast cancer cases. There's probably about 2,000 to 2,500 cases diagnosed annually here in the United States. But just 2 weeks ago, I diagnosed a man in my clinic with breast cancer. So it is quite rare, but I am a huge advocate of educating both men and women to know their bodies. And if they notice anything abnormal, even men in the breast area, they need to come on in and get it checked out.
Yeah, absolutely. So is it hereditary?
So about 5 to 10% of breast cancer cases are considered hereditary. There are various mutations or changes in genes passed down from generations that have been linked to breast cancer. BRCA1 and BRCA2 are considered the most common genetic causes. In my case, I have several women in my family who are breast cancer survivors. I had genetic testing done as soon as I was diagnosed, and my results showed that I had a variant of uncertain significance, or a VUS, on my BRCA2. This means that I have a genetic mutation that may be associated with an increased risk of breast or ovarian cancer.
Yeah, I'll just add to that, to Rhonda's point, about 5 to 10% of breast cancers may have genetic etiologies or causes. But the majority of breast cancer, we don't really know what causes, interestingly. And it's probably a culmination of factors, genetics combined with lifestyle choices and environmental exposures, and how all those elements work together on the individual level that put people at different risk for developing breast cancer. Certainly when we see women diagnosed at younger ages or women diagnosed where they also have a family history of breast cancer and other cancers, that heightens our degree of suspicion for a hereditary gene mutation as a cause of the breast cancer.
As we wrote about in the book, all of our mothers had breast cancer as well. My mother had breast cancer in her 50s.
Oh,
and
wow.
Because I was diagnosed at 42, I also had genetic testing done, but no genetic mutation was found. So it is very true that, you know, it's just because you have a family history doesn't mean there is a genetic mutation. I was certain I had a genetic mutation, but I did not. So,
wow. What are the signs and symptoms of breast cancer? What should people be aware of?
So this is Dr. DeYoung. I will say that in my experience, the most common presentation, and this is statistically true, is that the majority of women will present as a painless breast lump. However, I have seen breast cancer present in various forms. I have seen it present as a tender breast lump. I have seen it more rarely present as skin changes or contour changes or nipple inversion or more rarely nipple discharge. I think it gets back to knowing your body. And I will say that typically breast tenderness or breast pain as a lone symptom without any other symptoms is rarely a presentation of breast cancer.
Is early detection important for survival, and how can listeners screen themselves?
Yeah, you know, we absolutely know that early detection saves lives in most cases of breast cancer. Not all, but most cases we really make a difference when we catch the breast cancer early. I think knowing your body, whether you're a man or a woman, whether it's your hair, your feet, your breasts, you know, anything new or different needs to be evaluated. But as far as screening exams, you know, for the majority of women, we start talking about screening mammography starting at age 40.
every 1 to 2 years. Some women will choose to wait until 50 to start that screening process if they're at average risk. And some may start earlier than 40, depending on their family history. But we know that mammograms are a very effective way to catch breast cancer at the earliest possible stages.
For the women who had breast cancer of this group, how did you discover that you had it?
Well, this is Jennifer, and at age 37, after I was done breastfeeding my children, I did notice in my left breast that I did have some contour changes, like dimpling, and I decided to start doing self-breast exams. It was during my first exam that I felt a hard pea-sized nodule on the outer edge of my left breast. It was painless. But I called my healthcare provider to tell them about this new discovery. And later they had me come in and see my OBGYN. He wasn't too concerned at the time, but he wanted to err on the side of caution. And so he scheduled me my first mammogram. And right after the mammogram, without even getting dressed first, they sent me over for an ultrasound. And after the ultrasound, things became a little more concerning when they asked if I could come back in an hour for a biopsy. It was through this biopsy that I found out that I had it. And then I found out about my recurrence 7 years later due to a pain shooting down my left arm. And that pain would shoot down into my hand. And that began to develop in the fall of 2018. And a few months later, I saw my breast surgeon about the pain, and she actually performed a biopsy on a lump that was on my former incision site.
So I also was diagnosed pretty young. At age 38, I felt a lump in the middle of my right breast, and it seemed to be getting bigger when I was having PMS symptoms, and then it would seem to disappear shortly after my period. So on New Year's Day of 2017, I emailed my primary care doctor about my concerns, asked him if I should have a mammogram, and especially because my mother was a breast cancer survivor. He responded to my email and said I didn't need to have a mammogram until I turned 40. Unfortunately, he actually passed away about a week later. Gosh. So in early March, I decided to have the lump examined and made an appointment with my new primary care doctor. I told her about the disappearing and reappearing lump, and she felt it immediately and referred me to a biopsy the next day.
This is Mari. I was 42 when I was diagnosed, and I had been having annual mammograms since the age of 40, so I had already had two mammograms. My last mammogram had been in January of 2019, and then in August, I was driving to work, and I felt this, like, shooting, stabbing pain in my left breast, something I'd never felt before. And so I was thinking, what the heck was that? So I just kind of started to feel my breast, and I immediately felt a hard lump. So I went to work, I went about my day, and then when I came home, I further examined my breast, and I saw a dimple in the nipple. And I knew about the signs, so I was very concerned, and I immediately called my health insurance appointment line, and fortunately they had an appointment the next day, the very next morning. And that's actually where I met Dr. D. Young in the breast cancer clinic there. And she, of course, was amazing and compassionate and kind, but was very concerned with my lump after feeling it, seeing the dimple, and performing an ultrasound. So she recommended that I have another mammogram and an ultrasound-assisted biopsy, and she was able to get me an appointment within a couple of days, and I went to that appointment, and every person that saw me was extremely concerned, so they performed the biopsy after the mammogram, and, you know, I pretty much knew I had breast cancer without even having my biopsy results, but sure enough, within a week or so, I was diagnosed with invasive ductal carcinoma. And then it was after my surgery that I did learn I had actually stage 3 breast cancer.
To follow up, what was it like hearing that news? I can't imagine it was easy.
This is Jennifer. To be honest, I was in complete shock. and disbelief when the doctor on the other end of the phone told me that I had invasive ductal carcinoma. My mind was racing as he was saying those words to me because they were foreign, but then all of a sudden my world just felt like it was crumbling around me when I processed the word carcinoma. That was the one word that I knew what that meant. And all I could do really was just fall into my husband's lap as I sat stunned listening to the doctor on the other end. And, you know, the second time with my recurrence that I found out, I immediately knew when the nurse called and told me that she had bad news. You know, every hair was standing on end, and an immediate wave of fear came over me because I knew what I was dealing with this time, but I didn't know how, you know, how bad it was, how far it had spread. I found out about my recurrence due to pain shooting down my left arm and into my hand, and that began to develop in the fall of 2018. A few months later, I saw my breast surgeon about the pain, and she performed a biopsy on a lump that was on my former incision site. And this time, my cancer was found in my chest wall, my lymph nodes, and my axillary area. And that's where the tumors were pushing against a major nerve bundle. So that's why I was having that radiating pain in my left arm. As a breast cancer survivor, pain should never be ignored. But I have to say, both times my world seemed to come to a screeching halt. Cancer consumes your thoughts and it becomes your focus, whether you want it to or not. However, with time, you learn to cope with your diagnosis and you learn to navigate through your journey. And you recognize that you're a lot stronger than you think you are.
Right. This is Rhonda. So actually, Dr. DeYoung is the one who gave me the news. I was at work. I work at a high school on Monday morning that I had invasive ductal carcinoma. And even though I'd had the biopsy, I still wasn't expecting that kind of news. Dr. DeYoung did recommend that I take one step at a time, and I thought that was very sage advice. She said this was just a bump in the road of life, and she was already helping me process the news on the phone. After I hung up with her, I went to the staff lounge and called my husband, and he was, of course, supportive, but clearly blindsided. And then I called my mom, who had experienced a breast cancer diagnosis herself. And the phone calls kind of felt surreal, like I was telling someone else's story. I was definitely in a state of disbelief, and it was devastating to share the news with my loved ones.
This is Mari. Just quick background. I am a very type A planning person, and this was not a part of my plan. So this news, it was earth-shattering to me. I was completely devastated. And I think at the forefront of my mind is I have these two little boys that I want to be around for. I want to raise them. And I was so scared that this is going to take me out and I wasn't going to be there for them or my husband, who really, they need me. We work all well together. Right. So I was completely, completely devastated, paralyzed by fear. But I have to say, it took some time. I became grounded again and I learned so much, but it's just, it's earth shattering and nobody ever wants to hear those words, but you know, as you say in the book, there's hope, and that's one thing that I like to keep in mind. So however devastating it was that day, I think all of us have come a long way. But it's something that you will never forget, and it becomes a part of who you are and how you move forward with life and the journey of breast cancer.
Absolutely. Is breast cancer treatable?
So this is Dr. DeYoung. All breast cancer is treatable. You know, even stage 4 metastatic breast cancer, you know, with advances in treatment that are just advancing at such a rapid rate, women with metastatic breast cancer are living longer lives than ever before with good quality of lives. And those with earlier stage disease, we actually are not only treating them, but we cure women of breast cancer all the time. And so I think that as scary as it is to get a diagnosis of breast cancer, there's more hope than ever before that with treatment and good care, we'll get these ladies through this, what I call a big bump in the road of their lives.
Yeah, no, I love love hearing that. So what are the treatments and what are they like?
You know, for the majority of women, they will have some sort of surgery with or without radiation to locally control the cancer. Sometimes we recommend chemotherapy, especially if we know that there's some lymph nodes in the armpit involved, or there tends to be a more aggressive cancer. Sometimes if your breast cancer is sensitive to estrogen, we will give these ladies an anti-hormonal medication that they'll take for at least 5 years. But, you know, treatments are, as I said, just advancing at such rapid rates, especially with the chemotherapy leading to higher cure rates and longer, healthier lives, especially women with more advanced breast cancers. As far as surgery goes, there is, just for an example, a whole new area of surgery called oncoplastic surgery, where we combine plastic surgery techniques with breast cancer surgery to give better cosmetic outcomes. So treatment continues to advance, which is really, really exciting.
Good. What was your experience like on these treatments?
This is Jennifer. Between my two diagnoses, I underwent a wide range of treatment. The first time, I was only stage one, and it hadn't gone in my lymph nodes yet. But I underwent four different surgeries for that, and that included a bilateral mastectomy. That was definitely the most challenging of all of the surgeries that I had. I did hormone therapy after that, a daily pill of tamoxifen for a little over 5 years. And the hot flashes were probably my biggest complaint with that. It was with my second diagnosis that I underwent 16 rounds of chemo, 28 rounds of radiation, surgery with axillary lymph node dissection and reconstruction. This was due to it having lymph nodes involved. And the chemo and surgery with the axillary lymph node dissection were definitely the most challenging, and they've left the most residual effects. Some of those are some nerve damage and tightness in my left arm. Those are definitely the most noticeable. I am doing hormone therapy again. However, this time it's a little more intense. It's a daily pill of Arimidex and a monthly injection of Lupron to suppress my ovaries. So that puts me into menopause. Not only do I experience the fun hot flashes, but also joint pain and stiffness, along with many other symptoms that are experienced during menopause.
This is Rhonda. So I underwent a wide of range of treatments as well. I had a bilateral mastectomy with axillary lymph node dissection. I also had 8 rounds of chemotherapy, 28 sessions of radiation, and I did reconstruction. Overall, I think I tolerated the treatments pretty well, but I do have some residual tightness in my arm, and I've tried physical therapy for that, but it still remains almost 3 years later. Because I was young when I got diagnosed, and my BRCA2 results, and also having the hormone positive breast cancer, I chose to have my ovaries removed, so I'm in permanent menopause, and I'm currently taking Arimidex to limit the estrogen in my body. So as a result of that, I have similar kind of symptoms, difficulty sleeping, as well as some joint pain.
This is Mari. As I indicated earlier, I was diagnosed with stage 3 invasive ductal cell carcinoma. And correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. DeYoung, I think I was a stage 3 diagnosis because I had all of my lymph nodes removed, and I had 11 positive lymph nodes. That number 11 sticks with me today, and I think traumatized me, but you know, it is what it is now. But I did have I had surgery first, and I opted to proceed with a lumpectomy and reduction, and then I had 16 rounds of chemo. I rested for a couple of months in it, and then I had 30 sessions of radiation. I would say that I physically tolerated the treatment pretty well. I had extreme fatigue, nausea. I did lose all of my hair from head to toe, including my eyebrows, eyelashes. You know, I had, in the middle of chemotherapy, I had a pulmonary embolism, which I did learn was a side effect of chemo. So I was treated with blood thinners. But, you know, my nurse was so great, and she knew, she had an inkling right away what was going on with me when I went in for chemo. And sure enough, I was diagnosed with the embolism right away and treated. You know, it just, chemo takes a toll on your body, and you don't even know. Like, my toenails rotted out, and nobody told me that. And I was like, what is going on with my toenails?
Oh, wow. So,
you know, I couldn't eat foods that I once loved. I'm a big candle person. I love scents, but I didn't light a candle in my house the whole time because of the smells. The smells would make me really sick. But because I was diagnosed in late 2019, my treatments actually occurred during COVID. So the pandemic hit, and I was still going through chemo. So that was pretty hard. I think it actually caused depression as well. I don't think that the treatments caused depression, but just everything that I was going through. So I had, my husband usually went with me to treatment, but once COVID hit, I was going by myself to all of my treatments, all of my appointments, masked up. Everybody in the infusion center was masked up. That was hard. You just lose the smiles, the human touch. Everyone in the infusion center is so kind and loving, but it once COVID hit, it was really hard. So I finished chemo, going through COVID and all of my radiation treatment. I did under COVID restrictions as well, but I'm actually really proud of myself because even though I was going through COVID, my kids started distance learning, and it didn't matter. I was there. I was helping them. I was doing what I needed to do. So I found strength to still be a mom, still get chemo, still get radiation, still do what I needed to do. And I faced my fears by having to do a lot of things alone. So I really learned how to advocate for myself despite all of the bumps in the road. Cancer is hard enough without COVID. COVID made it really hard. But I have to say, hands down, to the staff in the infusion center there, they all kind of stepped up knowing that we couldn't bring in a support system. And I'm just really grateful for the wonderful people there. And chemo was really challenging. And I'm also taking a daily pill of Arimidex, and I'm getting a Lupron shot monthly. And that presents its challenges as well, but I'm learning how to navigate those challenges with joint pain and night sweats and other things. But exercises and diet really help. So it's a very, you can navigate the journey, you just have to figure out how. But it's hard, and hands down to anybody who goes through it.
Absolutely. I hear my mother's story and all of your stories, so I really appreciate you sharing. What would you like listeners to know about breast cancer? Maybe something you didn't realize before you were diagnosed.
Sure. I would like listeners to know that breast cancer is not just an old woman's disease. You know, I never dreamt that I could get breast cancer at age 37. And, you know, you don't typically do mammograms until age 40. But there's so many young women now getting breast cancer that I think, you know, self-breast exams just become that much more important. I also didn't realize that before being diagnosed that breast cancer is considered a chronic disease, you know, that you can have a recurrence 5 years later, 10 years later, or even 25 years later. You know, whereas a lot of other cancers, correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. DeYoung, but after 5 years, you know, and you haven't had a recurrence, they deem you as being cancer-free.
Yeah, I will just say that, you know, especially as a breast cancer survivor, you're never out of the woods, as they say. I mean, we typically monitor patients quite closely the first 5 years because statistically, many cancers will reoccur within that time frame, but, you know, there's always a chance of a reoccurrence. And that's why, you know, when we transition patients into survivorship, we really try to talk to them about lifestyle choices going forward that they can practice to decrease their risk of a reoccurrence. And we also try to work on that fear of reoccurrence that is so common and very normal, but it can be really debilitating for some women. So, you know, I think that survivorship part of the cancer journey is super, super important.
Well, one thing I would like listeners to know about breast cancer is that you don't necessarily have to lose your hair during chemo. I learned about cooling caps from a fellow breast cancer survivor that I met. And cooling caps, if you don't know, are stored in dry ice, and they can be worn throughout chemo to minimize hair loss. So the first 5 minutes felt like I was dipping my head directly into a bucket of ice. It was intense pain, but then after that, my head became numb, and I was able to tolerate it. My husband helped me, and we would rotate the cooling caps about every 20 minutes. And by the end of chemo, I still had about half of my hair. So for me, keeping my hair allowed me to blend in more at work and also in the community when I was out shopping. I also appeared less impacted by cancer around my young children.
This is Mari. I kind of have a lot that I want to share, but I'll make it very quick. I could not agree more with Dr. D. Young about knowing your breast and how important it is to undergo breast cancer screening as recommended by your doctor. Unfortunately, about 20% of women with breast cancer have tumors that are missed by mammogram screening, and that is what happened with me. So I think it's really important to know your breast inside and out. Do I have dense breasts? Do I see something abnormal? Knowing your breast is so important, and I don't think you can ever be lulled by a mammogram that's clear. I have taken my health into my own hands, and I mean that seriously. I feel myself constantly, and if you see anything abnormal, it's really important, or feel anything abnormal, it's really important to get it checked out. It can be life-saving. Also, and this is something that I wrote about in the book, and that is something that Dr. DeYoung from the very first day said. And there's a peer navigator program at Kaiser, and a woman that I met, and like I said, Dr. DeYoung said that this is for anybody on a cancer journey, quite frankly. It's, remember that it's a journey. It must be taken moment by moment, sometimes breath by breath, and other times step by step. And I truly believe that's how I got through it. I tried not to jump ahead or plan ahead. I just did what I needed to do in that moment, and it really helped me. And one last thing, I'm a true believer that cancer is a disease that impacts the entire family. It's not just the person receiving the diagnosis. It impacts those caring for the person, helping the person, whether it's friends or family. So I think that when there is a cancer diagnosis, it's much more than just the person going through it. It impacts the family. And I truly believe, as they say, it takes a village to raise children. I think it takes a village to navigate a cancer journey. So if it's possible to have a support system, it's extremely important. And I think there are a lot of things out there that people with cancer can seek support from, even if they don't have immediate family or friends that can help. So that's where I'm at.
This is Dr. DeYoung, and I just couldn't have said it better on so many levels. Two just follow-up points. One, I always try to tell patients, because when you get a diagnosis of cancer, you have all these different thoughts, and you can get so overwhelmed, and you're like, oh, my gosh, you know, will I need chemo? Do I need this? Do I need this? And I typically tell patients, hey, we're at chapter one. Or we're at the introduction of this unfortunate book that you started to read or have to go through. And I know your mind wants to jump to chapters 5, 6, and 7, but it's not even going to make sense. So it's doctor's orders. Don't go there.
Dr. DeYoung, I don't want to cut you off
now because each.
I just want to tell you how, I just want to tell you the day, I still remember the day that you told me that, and it has stuck with me. And I can't thank you enough for those words that you shared with me, because I tried not to write the next chapter, and that is what grounded me. So I can't thank you enough for that advice. It's amazing, and it's something that I will share with anybody who embarks on this unwanted journey. So thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. The other point I wanted to make, and I'll be brief, but Mari pointed out how other people are impacted by a person's cancer diagnosis. And that's why the National Cancer Institute actually includes family members and friends in the survivorship definition, because they are so impacted by the experience, sometimes more so than the cancer survivor themselves. But I think recognizing that is very important. So thanks for bringing that up, Mari.
Well, let's talk about the book, because that's the main reason why you're here. I love that the three of you got together to write this book. Tell us about it. What was your experience writing it, and why did you want to write it?
So Mari actually coined the term C squared for cancer during COVID-19, because it is very challenging and multi-layered. Mm-hmm. So I met with both Mari and Jennifer during the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, and we provided support and encouragement to each other, especially since they were both still going through treatment. And as we were talking and sharing, we realized we had a lot in common, including that our mothers are breast cancer survivors, that we had a similar diagnosis, that we were being diagnosed at a young age, and that we were even getting treatment at the same hospital. So we decided to share our experiences on paper and to use both honesty and humor. And on top of that, we wanted to interview our mothers to kind of understand their experiences as long-term cancer survivors. And then again, as they mentioned about the family, we interviewed both our spouses and all 8 of our children for their perspectives on how cancer can affect the entire family.
This is Mari. I think that, when Rhonda first approached me to write the book, I was still going through active treatment, but I think probably speaks for all of us in writing this. I think that the purpose was twofold. There was a personal purpose. Putting my story on paper helped me lift some burdens from my shoulders. It helped to put it out there. Being involved with other women who had gone through a similar experience, providing some own personal healing. But I think that the main purpose is sharing our stories and the ups and downs and the trials and tribulations of a breast cancer journey. The hope is to help and provide comfort to others going through similar experiences. And I think there's 2 reasons. And that's what our hope is that it gives hope to others going through this journey and to know that they aren't alone. And a lot of the experiences are normal, even if hard.
What do you hope to get out of it or to relay to others?
I think the hope of getting out of it is just that. I think the writing of the book provides some personal healing, but I think it's really important to, I think knowledge is power, and to let others know what the experience is like and some of the side effects are. And I think that it can help others not feel so alone in their journey. And for me, for example, like I've known women who have since been diagnosed, and I've been able to write them a personal note and give them this book in the hope that I can help them and give them hope. And another thing that I've realized too, in all of our journeys, we were all diagnosed with the same cancer, invasive ductal carcinoma. We were all hormone receptive cancers, but our journeys have been quite different. But even though our journeys are different, I think that there is a commonality. And I think that that commonality is the hope that we are going to be here, that we are going to help others, and there is light at the end of the tunnel. So I think our hope with Hope Among Us, you know?
Yeah.
And correct me if I'm wrong, ladies.
You're absolutely right, Mari. Absolutely right.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I would just say, as it's been said before, that, it takes a village to navigate cancer, that it's really important to seek support through your faith community. I know for me personally, my church was an absolute pillar for me and my family during that time. So I would definitely make that advice to people to seek support through their faith community or online. There's so many great even Facebook groups that you can join and ask questions and seek advice from other people or input of their experiences. Or seek support through local or national organizations. There's so many great ones out there. There's so many resources that are available for cancer patients, survivors, and their families. You just need to know where to look and how to take steps to reach out to them.
And I'd like to add, one of the top resources in our book is Camp Kesem, K-E-S-E-M. And Camp Kesem is a national organization that provides free week-long summer camps for children of cancer survivors. My kids actually started going when I was in chemo, and now they look forward to camp every summer. They participate in traditional camp activities and also feeling-based activities, and they can connect with kids in similar situations for years to come.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I'm actually going through Triumph Fitness at the moment, and it's a 12-week exercise program for cancer survivors, and I have found it so beneficial. The instructors are cancer certified specialists, and they've really helped with a lot of my joint pain and other things. So I think something, Rhonda is a great resource for a lot of the resources out there for cancer, people going through cancer and also cancer survivors. And I think that's one of the highlights of the book. It highlights a lot of those resources. And it's important to reach out to others and to seek those resources that will help you while you're on that cancer journey. And I truly believe you're on that cancer journey when you're going through cancer. It is a journey that continues the rest of your life. It continues after cancer. So it's important to continue to seek those resources.
This is Dr. DeYoung. I will just say that I am so proud of these three ladies. They're great examples of resiliency and strength. This book is written just with raw honesty. I literally read it in one afternoon because I just got so taken by their stories that has been alluded to have some similarities, but every person's cancer journey is unique, and it's their own journey. And I think, you know, just to mention that cancer does not end with treatment. And I think finally the medical community is recognizing that it's not just making the diagnosis and treating the patient. It is trying to work with them afterwards to get them back to, you hear the trite saying, the new normal. But I think it takes a lot of time for cancer survivors to heal physically, to heal spiritually. It can oftentimes take a few years.
Yeah.
And it's a new normal. It's different. And I think that we are recognizing that cancer survivors need help with that. And I do think, and it'd be interesting to hear what these ladies think, if they agree with me, but that probably writing this book, that was part of the healing process for them. Would you all agree to a little?
Yeah.
To a certain extent?
Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That was, for me, it was, my goal was in part to heal. And like I said, I felt like I was carrying a burden, of it's just fear, stress, and anxiety. And by putting it on paper, it helped me relieve some of that. And the thought of helping others actually, for me, is really healing as well.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Yeah.
So where can listeners buy the book?
Well, first, let me just say thank you so much for having us, Cody. We really appreciate you allowing us to come on and discuss the book, and as well as for helping bring about breast cancer awareness. We really appreciate that. Hope Among Us, Stories of Three Young Breast Cancer Survivors, was released on January 1st. It is available on Amazon in paperback, hardcover, and Kindle ebook. Listeners can also ask us questions at hopeamongusbook@gmail.com or join our Facebook page at Hope Among Us Book.
Great. Thank you so much for being here. Thanks for sharing your stories. That was Dr. Claudia DeYoung, Rhonda Azagire, Jennifer Dresser, and Mari Guzman. If you would like more information on their book, Hope Among Us, Stories of Three Young Breast Cancer Survivors, visit their Facebook page, Hope Among Us Book. That's Hope Among Us Book on Facebook. If you have questions regarding this program, please direct your correspondence to Public Affairs in care of this station.